don't think too much about the outcomes and what other people will think. You just have to motivate yourself and have that discipline to not let those nagging voices get into your head.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Creative Chats. I am your host, Mike Brennan, and this is the podcast where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. And I love to unpack these things mostly with my guests and explore how we can apply these things to our own creative processes and journeys. Now, I would love to also invite you to subscribe to the Daily Creative Habit email newsletter. Nobody needs more emails, I get that. But this email that I send out once a week is packed with some inspiration, some resources. I give daily creative prompts for you if you're looking for something to get you out of the rut, to kind of get the juices flowing. Perfect for you. Also, we have a community over on Facebook that is called Daily Creative Habit as well. And I would love for you just to be taking a step to be a part of that community. Come around people who are like-minded, raising their hands to say, I want to show up more consistently for my creativity and craft. So if that's you, head on over to dailycreativehabit.com and you'll find all those resources there. Hey, I'd also love to invite you to check out my book, Make Fun a Habit. It's the creative playbook for making life and work fun again. If you have felt like fun has up and left the building somewhere along the way, I think we all do at some point, you find yourself centering around some practicality and responsibility and all the adulting words. If you need a little bit more fun in your life, in your work, in your experience, then I want to invite you to grab a copy of my book. It's 30 short chapters that give you some inspiration, some practical application, and exercises so that you can start to experience some more fun in and around your life. Go to makefunahabit.com and grab your copy today. Hey, I always love when I can have a guest come back for another visit. And that's the case with today's guest, Andrea Grant. Andrea was on episode 141 of Creative Chats, and we explored her story and some of her work previous to a project that we're talking about today, which is Night Swimming, her spoken word film. And love connecting with Andrea and just talking about where this idea came from and her process in getting this film created. And then we talk a little bit about the process of actually marketing the film and all the things that go into the creation process. And I was so grateful that I was able to have this conversation with Andrea and her willingness to share the behind the scenes and some of her process and thoughts on her creative process and this journey and the work that she does. And so I highly recommend that you go to Andrea's website and that you go and see this film for yourself. It is beautifully done, just top to bottom. I can't say enough about it. And be sure to look in the show notes for some links and enjoy this episode with this ultra creative person. So without further ado, here is my creative chat with Andrea Grant. Well, Andrea, welcome back to the Creative Chats podcast.
Thank you, Mike. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too. I just love when I can reconnect with people after a little time and catch up on some new things they're doing. And I so enjoyed our conversation last time. You know, kindred spirit of like uber creative, right? Lots of things happening, lots of projects, always pushing towards a new thing. And so today you're going to share with us about your new project, spoken word film Night Swimming, right? So I'm excited about this.
Thank you. It's been a few months in the making, so it's excited to finally be getting it out into the world.
Yeah. So for our listeners, can you talk a little bit about what is the spoken word film? Give us some context so that people can understand kind of why you did this and what it is.
Well, really, water to me has always been so powerful, whether it's a rainstorm and thunder or swimming in the ocean or any number of things. Just I've always felt such a a connection to it. And I thought that it would be a really good allegory for the feelings of women, you know, the tempest and the heartbreak, and how women seem to have this, like, you know, they go take a hot bath when they're stressed out, you know. And I just thought that imagery just started swirling around my head. And I thought, well, living in Southern California, like, how beautiful would it be to go to a beach that's sort of abandoned, although they never are really, they're always busy, but to film like scenes and kind of going in the water and getting drenched and feeling that the power of Mother Nature, you know. And then we shot some scenes at night in a pool, and then we went to a rain room, which was really cool. So it's like a studio where you go in and you turn on the faucet and literally control how much rain you want to have dropping down, whether you want to get soaking wet or whatnot. So that was very different, a very different experience for me.
Yeah, I love it. You know, and I watched the film and was just completely blown away. Of course I'd expect nothing less. You do everything with quality and excellence, and was just really captured by just even the look and the feel of everything, was just, you know, breathtaking. So kudos on that. I'd love to hear a little bit about, like, can you walk us through, like, okay, so you have this idea, right? Like, where do you start? Is it the words that come, and then the concept? Like, talk us through a little bit of the process of, like, taking this idea to all of a sudden then having this final film that people can view.
Yes, definitely. So usually with my poems, they start as pieces of ideas. So I usually write, there's certain times of year where I'm more in writing mode and creative mode, like in the early spring into the summertime. So yeah, I had a piece of the pool section written that I was going to use for another poem. And eventually it just started to become this huge, long piece. And yet it seemed to work. It's almost four poems in one. It's the longest one I've ever written. So once I get that happening and it feels like there's a flow and a cadence to it, then I still edit it a number of times and then start thinking about music and start thinking about imagery. Like, if this was going to be a visual story, where's the symbolism and what are the elements that can be drawn from? Like, how could we realistically shoot this and have it make an impact, you know, in a short time of filming? We filmed really, really hard for 3 days. So, and then of course you get into the editing and working with music and editing again, and it takes a few months to really get it finished.
Was this the kind of thing where you had a very specific vision for something and it's pretty close to where you ended up, or did you go in with, like, a little bit more, like, sense of, I'm gonna have something I'm shooting towards, but be open to what develops?
Yes, definitely. When you're collaborating with other creatives, you know, the filmmaker, the video editor, producers who come in and help, makeup artists, everybody has an opinion. And some really interesting ideas will come out of nowhere. Props, something will be lying in the corner of someone's apartment and they'll say, you know, you could use this as in this scene, you know, it'd be really cool to be holding an umbrella or whatever it is prop wise. But yeah, I really rely on that feedback. Like, I know what I'm doing in front of the camera and I know what it looks like in terms of angles and that, but the filmmaker would, for example, in the studio with the rain room, she would be up in the corner trying not to get the camera wet and sort of tipping half upside down, and then I would be twisted into a different angle. And a lot of really interesting ideas come out of discomfort too. Like, I was not looking forward to having my hair get wet after, you know, everything's all done and you're finally ready, and then to know that you're just going to have to surrender to it. Like, that was a big thing for me. It was almost like a baptism. Just that immersion in the you know, that kind of dirty tap water.
Yeah. Well, how do you navigate when you have a sense of vision, right? And you're inviting somebody else in and you're trying to be open to that feedback and those suggestions and things. Like, how do you know where to stick to, okay, this is what I see and this is what I feel, and where to be open and flexible?
I think that I'm very determined. So if there's something that I don't agree with, I won't do it. I'll just say, no, that's not going to work. This with, you know, that doesn't really fit with the vision. But I try to do as much work beforehand as possible. I get a lot of photo references and I storyboard everything out. So I've got pictures of the locations. That way people will kind of know what to expect when they get there. And I'll have my poem on one side and then I'll have the shot list on the other side. And so it's pretty clear. You know, somebody will always say, do this, or no, move this way, or don't close your eyes when the ocean is spraying you in the eyes, you know. And or walk this way. Like, you always need somebody. The filmmaker I work with, she's quite quiet. Her name is Cassandra Cross, and I brought on a co-producer who's a photographer that I worked with a lot in the past, and she's great. She's bossy. So she would be saying, do this, move your hands this way, throw the garment in the pool and swish it that way, you know? And so you always hear like a lot of voices coming at you
right
when you're on camera, but you just have to also take the feedback where it seems like it's rolling in a good way, and the energy is up and everybody's excited about it, versus being in your own head too. Mm-hmm. And know kind of how you're coming off and presenting.
It's a dance to be able to invite somebody else into that process, help make them feel like they're lending things to it and not just simply being, you know, the worker bees carrying out all the things you say, so that the best comes out of everybody, right?
Mm-hmm, definitely. And, you know, I'm very sensitive to people's feelings too. I don't want anybody to feel like they're having a bad experience at all, or that they're feeling like their voice and their point of view doesn't matter, you know? So I really focus on like lifting everybody up, keeping the energy going. And sometimes there's tensions between people too. You can tell, like, they don't really like each other. So it's just it's a fact. And I just try to be the peacekeeper and keep everything very neutral, so no one feels like they're being talked down to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I have to do a lot of apologizing. I don't know why. It just looks that way.
The peacekeeper, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Have there been things that you have, and I'm assuming this is the case, where you've done other projects in the past, they've taught you things about a process, or you've gleaned insights and it prepared you for this particular project? And if so, like, what are some of those things that you went into this project knowing already, like, I've learned this part and I know what I need to do?
A mentor of mine is Jim Salascrup, and he started drawing Spider-Man when he was 14 years old. He's kind of a prodigy. And when I was creating my Minx graphic novel project, there was a point where I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. The artist was so late on the deliverables. The book was like a year behind. And I asked him for advice, and he said, every project 3/4 of the way through has an implosion point. So this is just what needs to happen in the third act or whatever. And you need to just roll with it and not freak out, because the world is not going to end if you don't make the deadline in your head. So I always took that to heart. And then making my first film, Modern Native, it was right before the pandemic that we filmed. And I filmed some scenes in LA, some scenes in the Pacific Northwest, in a studio, and then in New York City. So what I learned from that was, I moved around a lot, you know, and had different crews, and I was trying to make something cohesive out of something a little bit disconnected. Mm-hmm. Because of course everybody has their eye And then it can be difficult for the film editor to put everything together when there's disparity. So I learned, okay, stay closer to home, go where it's drivable. Don't get on a plane and rush for 3 days and run back and, you know, create chaos. So this film, Night Swimming, was definitely much more mapped out and realistic to complete. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, you know, building on the experiences of the past, learning those things, taking all that into consideration, and now you have another experience to even do that for whatever comes next too. Were there things that were surprising to you as you were doing this that you didn't anticipate, and perhaps were big aha moments, or even moments of like, okay, we're not doing that anymore?
Yeah. Well, I think day one of filming, communication. So making sure everybody has their equipment. The filmmaker I had worked with before, and she did a lot of work with drones. So I assumed that she was bringing her drone that I thought beautiful, the California coast, so it's just going to look amazing. And she didn't bring the drone. So I had to get a drone on Amazon, get it rush delivered. Thank goodness I was able to do that. But I forgot to tell her to plug it in and charge. So I just assumed, and I've learned that time when you're getting ready, like you're in the makeup chair, you really have to, as much as you trust people to do their jobs, you have to really remind them too. Like, did you bring this? Did you charge this? Is your app working? Did you test it out in the backyard? Because it just saves time. Mm-hmm. You know, and time just becomes so of the essence, because hair and makeup takes 3 hours. And then we did a look change because of course it was like the hottest 3 days in July when we filmed, and just keeping everything like from melting, and to keep from sunburning, you know, we had to be really diligent with sunscreen and things like that. And just, you know, things like you think you can film some drone footage and then you'll get to a beach and it will say no drones. So then you're kind of waiting for that perfect moment as sunset approaches that you'll just sneak and use the drone anyway, things like that.
Right. You're going to get creative, yeah. Right?
Yes, exactly. Whenever you're in a public place, you just don't know what's going to happen. Mm. You never know who's going to run like in the back of your shot or how far the tide will be in.
Yeah.
It's fun though. There's nothing really like it, you know, to create something visual like that and see it come to life. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Did you film this sequentially, or you just kind of planned it around? Like, I'm assuming if you're wet and you're soaked, obviously makeup is an issue and hair and makeup, all that stuff, right? So you have to be more strategic as far as when you do certain things, right? Even time of day and things like that you mentioned.
Exactly. Yeah. So we did do it. We did like an ocean day with some other locations in Orange County, and then we had an LA day, which was to film some scenes like at Indian Alley and at the pool. And then the rain room day was just in LA as well. We knew that we had a limited amount of time. We had a couple of hours in the studio and we just had to get it right. Of course, the air conditioning isn't working. It's hot.
Yeah. All the behind the scenes stuff that no one knows, but you know what went into it. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So through the process of doing this, and you know, you're filming, you talked a little bit about, you know, having the ideas and the words and developing that, you go into filming. What place in that does the scoring happen? Does that happen for you? Like, do you hear some of the stuff as you're writing and as you're thinking about it, even before you film, or you're waiting until, okay, we're filming and then afterwards we're scoring it?
I think it's ideal to have the vocals recorded beforehand and have, you definitely need a scratch track, mm-hmm. I believe it's called, where it's just very rough, like it's not the polished final, but there's a piano riff and the vocals are done. Hopefully they're the final vocals and you don't have to change things with the timing. But yeah, it, and then once the videographer starts to edit, she would send some drafts and scenes that she thought were the best scenes. And then we would take a look at it and then work on the music a little bit. So ideally, if you could have everything scored beforehand and just have to do a couple of changes, that makes the videographer's life a lot easier. I think we tortured her with a few different revisions. So that was something I had to apologize for.
Yeah. But that's typically part of the creation process though, too, is, you know, you're wanting to make sure that you have those revision rounds, get the best possible. And sometimes it means a little extra work for somebody, but hopefully in the end, everybody knows they can stand by something and be proud of all the work that went into it, you know?
Exactly. And that's what matters at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone's happy now.
Exactly. Exactly. So you finished the film and then like what goes into you saying, okay, I want to get this out before people. There are, I'm sure, different venues that you connected with, film festivals, things like that, right? But what do you think about when you think about, I want to get this before people? Like, what are the avenues that you explore, and maybe some of the relationships? Like, talk a little bit about, like, actually putting this out into public.
Right. Well, the film festival circuit gives you a sense of credibility in the eyes of people who are, you know, what is this? And why should I care? Why should I be interested in it?
Right.
You know, so that accumulating like a few laurels and a few semifinalists awards is always really, really helpful. And then PR, doing some interviews and just having certain people who do reviews, like doing a little review on it, you know, or doing an interview with me or with, you know, and then it's just like push on social media,
right?
A little advertising and then just trying to really get the word out. I just put it on YouTube because it's been in a few exclusive film festivals and now it's time to just really get it out there. So yeah. It's just, you know, like marketing anything, right? It's not the easiest with all of the noise, but I feel by mentioning something a few months before it's finished and it's going to be launched, that creates momentum and drives a little bit of excitement. And then when it finally does come in to be available to view, people are actually, they remember and they're excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so many times it's easy to get caught in the creation process for a lot of creative people, but they're not thinking about the marketing. They're not thinking about the launching phase of things. And yet that is so important too, because if you intend to get it out in front of people, you really need to think strategically about how are you doing that? Who are you talking to? What are the avenues you're exploring? And that there's a process to that as well, not just in the actual creation of your art and creativity, you know? So I definitely think that is something to underscore in a lot of conversations, in creating something and getting it out there. And then, you know, how do you navigate expectation versus, you know, outcomes that are outside your control, right? I'm sure you have a vision, certain things that you want to see happen with when you're launching something and putting it out into the world. But how do you personally like navigate that tension of like, okay, I'm doing all the things, but yet there's this, you know, I don't know what's going to happen.
It's tough sometimes, you know, the length of a short film, they don't tend to get picked up by distributors because it's a strange block of time that the movie theater maybe won't want to schedule something that's 9 minutes, you know, because what do they do for the other 30 minutes? But there's a lot of smaller venues, there's galleries, there are different avenues to think about. So for example, I've got a good friend who does events all over the world and plans these really cool events and features a lot of artists. So I'll make sure I stay in touch with those who are in the know and those who might have a venue to show the film, like a gallery or something that might be of interest. And then I just continued to submit to film festivals, and a lot of them are online, but some of them are in person. So I'll of course go if they're in California, and that will be momentum. And then just to continue to push, and just don't let people forget what you do. I think as a creative, and you probably feel the same way. Once you finish something, you feel kind of, now what, you know, and a little overwhelmed, because the goal was to always finish the project. But then once you're finished, it can be daunting. I keep meticulous lists, and I look at where Modern Native won or was screened in past festivals. And then I try to apply to those ones that I feel would like Night Swimming. And then, just at some point I'll do a launch party or something, a screener, you know, so you can always kind of revive it. Or if you launch something else, then people are excited about what you've done in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know how it is. You're only as good as your last project.
Right. Yeah. You know, as you're describing that, something that came to mind, I'd love to ask you, do you find more motivation and reward in the actual process of creating the thing? Or is it more in you've created it and now you're bringing it before people and getting to see how they interact with what you've created?
I think definitely when it's finished. I'm excited throughout while creating it, but I'm more ramped up and excited about it actually going out into the world.
Yeah.
And then of course, like, as you said before, you don't really know how it's going to hit. Are people going to like it? Just because I like it doesn't mean it's everybody's taste, but just trying to hit the marks wherever I can. Yeah. At least I feel like I'm making progress, and it's a couple of years of promotion. It's not just, okay, it's been 3 months.
Right.
You know, you got to keep at it.
Yeah. And as a creative person who's always looking to the next, that's a challenging thing, to stick with something for a longer haul, because there's a sense of, I've already done that. I've completed that. And yeah, there's this extra piece, but I want to make something new. The shiny object is getting my attention, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. So in terms of like a win for you, what are you hoping that people walk away with when they see this film?
I hope that they will take into consideration aspects of First Nations culture and storytelling. You know, Natives have moved from an oral tradition to different ways of communicating and keeping the stories alive. But, you know, what happens when they aren't translated into different mediums? You know, they get lost, they get kind of put in a box with some papers and filed away. So I'm trying to keep some elements of traditional culture at the forefront of my projects, just so people feel connected to the mythology. Maybe I always love it when people see themselves in it. Mm-hmm. You know, when the themes feel universal, it's not just my point of view and it's meant to be about the collective.
Yeah. Yeah. When you get to that place of seeing the universal threads, people being able to go, okay, this is your context, but now I can see myself in that and apply what it is that you're talking about or relate to, even though it may be completely different. I think that's something that's magical that happens there. And that's when you know you've hit on something that is much larger than just you, right?
I think that's important. I mean, artists are not really so narcissistic, you know, as people might think with their creations. But no, I think that the goal is always to touch people and have them feel a connection to the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it takes on a life of its own. And once you put it out there, there are places and people that it can go and touch and move that even perhaps you didn't even intend on certain things happening. And I think that's the beauty of art and interpreting things and making it their own once they're interacting with something. It's a beautiful thing. I'd love to know, as you're thinking about, you know, okay, this is out there. You're obviously still talking about this, but we did hint at like, okay, next and new, right? You're a phenomenal storyteller, and you've used a variety of means to do that and to convey story and meaning. Is there anything that you have yet to do that you're thinking like, I would love to do this, you know, work in this form or this medium or do this kind of project?
Yeah, I would love, I'm working on it, but I would love to get into animation with my graphic novel series and bringing that to life. And I would just love to have it be something that's picked up, you know, by a Netflix or one of those companies. So I am working towards that. I'm trying to get a trailer together that is exciting, and it just shows the character and the connection to the wolves and a supernatural element. You know, like, who is she? Why is she being called to this adventure? Like, typical superhero stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what I really am making an effort to finish up a trailer right now. It takes a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think people realize, like, that they'll see some clips and things, and in our consumerist society, people are moving so quickly. There's so many choices of things and things happening that sometimes the art of appreciating what goes into making something gets lost. And so I love having conversations like this where we can unpack it a little bit more and have people stop and breathe a little bit and go like, oh yeah, like there's a real person behind this, and there's real people who are lending skills, and there's time, and there's a process, and all that goes into it. Your ability to navigate these different projects and then even stay with things that, because it takes a long time, like, how do you pace yourself so that you either A, don't burn out, or B, don't lose interest?
Yeah, that's a tricky dance. Sometimes I do put things away for quite a while, sometimes even a couple of years. If there's a poem and it's just, I can't just get it to where it needs to be. So yeah, I do have a lot of projects that are in various stages of completion.
Yeah.
So sometimes if it's really not working, I figure the timing isn't right. Mm-hmm. Maybe I haven't learned enough about a topic, or maybe there's just something I need to look at in a different perspective. So yeah. I think a book that you write when you're 18, you know, you're going to look at it again when you're 25 and you're going to say, oh, right, you know, this isn't what I want to write at all. So I think it depends on most of my projects are collaborative. So I collaborate with artists, filmmakers, photographers. You're relying on their schedule and their timeline too. Yeah. And artists are notoriously slow. So it takes a long time to get your illustrations or your pages or what have you. So patience is important too.
Yeah. Yeah. You also hinted at something I think that is interesting to examine in terms of like evolution of yourself as a creative person, right? And how you may have interests that change, or you may have mediums that change, right? And how have you seen that shape your projects over time?
If I ever really hesitated about something being ready and it just, I couldn't figure out how to package it or categorize it. There've been times in my artistic practices too, where I've started doing something that I love. Like I was making collage for a while, and I love making that art, but then I had to take a step back and say, okay, this is taking me too long to do one thing, and I have to shift gears. And, you know, sometimes you have to choose what you think will be more commercially viable. Mm-hmm. Not everything can just be cerebral art house.
Right.
You know, a comic book, a graphic novel series that's more commercial than maybe a book of, maybe a nonfiction book. It's hard to say. It just depends. I look at trends and I look what people are reading, how they're viewing media. And now you just, you don't see a lot of people reading an actual hard copy book anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the Kindle or it's reading on the phone. And, you know, so I give a lot of thought to how people are consuming media.
Yeah.
And there's things like that I don't think are useful. I think X is stupid. Twitter, I think it's stupid. I'm not going to use it. I think TikTok is always on the verge of getting banned.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem like worth my time to make videos when I hate TikTok, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's these things like, I guess I conserve my energy in terms of burnout and digital fatigue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I work in the social media field and mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I have to do client work and then balance that with creativity. So I enjoy like everything. And then there's paperwork and admin and taxes and right. All of that is very, very time consuming. So,
yeah.
So pace and shifting gears, sometimes shifting priorities.
Yeah.
Is really important.
Have you had any experiences where you've been absolutely in love with something creatively for yourself and ended up either killing it or hating it because you've decided to monetize it or market it?
Mm. You know, my early comic books were pretty clunky. You know, I would still go to Comic-Con and promote them, but the story wasn't cohesive. It was really, and the art was not very good either. And I was mixing too many mediums, like trying to do collages, trying to do things, but it didn't really work. My early work was more about the learning experience, I guess, and having fun with creating a universe and creating different characters. I did write a memoir quite a long time ago, and then I decided to shelve it because it was about my upbringing and just how I got kind of onto the creative path. And then I just, now I look at it, I'm like, oh, it's terrible. It ends in the wrong spot. It's not a very good cliffhanger. So, you know, I'm slowly kind of rewriting that. Mm-hmm. And then again, I don't know if I'll put that into the world. It sort of depends how everything else goes and what people care about.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of what I create. So,
yeah. And sometimes there are things that we create that end up being the bridge projects, right? Like it's not the actual thing that you land on, but it's the thing that led you to something else, a bigger idea or an experience that you learned that then helped you move forward in something else, right?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I started writing poetry before we really had the internet, you know, and then we had the internet, of course, and then, I was really an early adopter of everything. So building websites and creating promotional materials back when you'd walk around and hand out postcards and like invite people to events. And, you know, my background was like very starting from scratch and building something, building an arts magazine because I wanted to be an editor and I wanted to have a different job in life.
Yeah.
You know, and so the journey has been really interesting. And I just never would have conceived that I would be creating visual art. You know, audio was one thing, but now to be able to make films, it's incredible.
Hmm. Yeah. And as technology even has changed and made things more accessible, that's exciting to be in a time when you can do these things and not have to rely on huge budgets and big studios and all the things that perhaps at one time seemed way out of reach, right?
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. People can, you know, there's a lot of support. There's a lot of arts grants. There's a lot of, people are excited about the arts, you know? So they're always going to support somehow, whether it's coming to your launch party or buying a book or whatnot. I think that's what helps keep us motivated too, is that people like our work or they're looking at it. It's exciting.
Yeah. There's a certain validation that comes when somebody says, yes, I'm supporting that. I like that. I want to be a part of that. And of course that's a whole other conversation. Sometimes that's tricky as creative people to not look so much for that external validation, but to know like you're validating yourself and your work first, and then you're putting it out. And yes, you hope that people will like it and buy it and all the things. But that's just encouragement. That's just fuel for the journey and connection, honestly, right?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I would love to just end with one last question. And if somebody's listening right now and they're like, I have this idea, maybe there's something, you know, maybe it's a film, maybe it's spoken word, maybe it's something else, visual art, or just even a creative entrepreneur idea. What advice would you give them in order to have them say, like, get started?
Just start. Don't think too much about the outcomes and what other people will think. You just have to motivate yourself and have that discipline to not let those nagging voices get into your head. Will people like this? Will anybody know that I did this? Like, you can't really think about outcomes. Like, yes, you can plan and make lists and set intentions, but at a point you're just going to have to let it go into the world in all its glory and just see where it lands. But I think people are afraid to start. They're afraid of rejection, and you have to be fearless. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people have a vision of something and there's too much of a gap of maybe what they're able to execute and what their vision is. And so they go, well, I'm just going to either wait, or I'm just too afraid to put this out there because I know that if I put it out, it's not going to be quote perfect. Right.
Yes. Yeah. There is a lot of that. And that's why there's a lot of frustrated people, you know, who think about something or they have a dream for decades sometimes, and they just don't really know how to go about it. I mean, you can learn so much from people and asking questions, and people are very helpful mm-hmm. when it comes down to it. And you can't be an island. You have to have that support. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you don't give away the whole idea, but, you know, figure out how someone makes an independent film. Figure out what would you need for equipment to do spoken word? Like, how do you find a producer? How do you distribute it digitally? You know, and I think just, you can find out a lot just researching, of course. But people are very helpful too and supportive, I find, when you ask good questions.
Yeah.
And that's them as an expert.
That's the key, right? But you have to ask, because people aren't going to know that this is your intention, know this is your desire, if you're simply just keeping it all bottled inside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's worse to live with regret. You know, and I hear people saying like, oh, I should have done this. I should have had a Grammy Award. I should have completed an album, but I just got stuck. I couldn't do it, you know? So I think and then people start to feel too old mm-hmm. and held back. But you can be an artist forever. You know, it's not like acting and being affected by ageism and discrimination, but
yeah, to dream things up and take action and put those things out into the world. And so much of it is just us having the courage to step up and do those things and invite people into the process. Like you said, ask for help, do the research. And we will never know what impact something may have, not only on us, but the people around us, until we take that action. And that's what, you know, I love championing that for other people to say, you know, when you create, we all win. And I truly believe that.
Yes. You know? Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I just love speaking with you. I love hanging out and just finding out about the things you're doing and just your process and storytelling, and just love just how you show up in the world, Andrea. So I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Where can people go and view the film? You said that you're putting it on YouTube, and just your website. Yes. Any links, any place you want to point people to?
Okay. I will put it on my website, andreagrant.com. Right now it's on YouTube and it's on my Instagram. So my Instagram is andreagrant.copious.
Great. I'll be sure to put that in the show notes and make it easy for people to just click and follow along. And I encourage people to make sure that they view your film and to get to know your work, because I think you're doing important work and beautiful work. And I think that's just coming from the inside out. You just radiate this. And so thank you for being you.
That's so kind. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Sweet. So, very sweet.
We'll have to say, we'll put a pin in this, because I'm sure there'll be another opportunity in the not too distant future where we come and talk about something else that you're creating. And so until that time, yeah. Thank you so much for this time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.